Weekend Breakfast
on 702. Let's walk the talk.
Everyone must stay at home. If you wake up on Monday, you must be okay. There's nothing at home for Monday. Everyone, your workers, yes, your unions have been in change. Everyone must stay at home.
That's a member of the EFF in a crowded supermarket. This came from yesterday, telling everyone to stay at home. And as we know, nobody has a right to tell us to stay at home. So I'm wondering whether you are going to be staying at home and what that sort of action does when it comes to whipping up people into some kind of disturbance, what role that possibly plays when it comes to mob mentality. So let's bring in our newly minted doctor, Khosi Giani. A very good morning to you.
A very good morning to you too, Jane.
So, you know, we've been hearing a lot of quite explosive speeches around tomorrow. You know, individuals whipping up some sort of enthusiasm to demonstrate. How does that play into what we define as mob mentality?
Yeah. So what we are talking about in terms of mob mentality or mob psychology, it is the psychology of what human behavior when they gather in crowds in pursuit of or in protection of what they regard as a cherished common goal. And what we are looking at essentially is what happens to the individual psyche, mentality, rationale, perception, and attitudes when immersed or subjected to the amorphousness of a collective. And the core concern, of course, is the propensity of this collective to engage in violent and destructive means in pursuit of what may even be deemed a legitimate, noble, or worthy cause, and in the process of doing so, encroaching on and violating the rights and freedoms of others. So what crowds essentially do is they seek to leverage and to mobilize the formidable power of numbers. And that's when things are likely to go, you know, awry. And if we listen to that clip, and I remember watching that clip specifically, you know, the language that is used is a must, which then is an imposition of their own will, their own desire on those who may not share the same sentiment. And of course, you know, this is invariably going to be a psychopolitical discussion because on the one hand, you could say, please, you know, the EFF is seeking to capitalize on low-hanging fruit because tomorrow is a day prior to public day. Most people would have made arrangements to take the day off, you know. So on one hand, they are going to be seeking to say if people are not going to work, that it is attributed to them when it isn't necessarily so, right? But of course, that doesn't take away the fact that by the public statements that they have been making leading up to this day is that they have then perhaps, you know, influenced people to make the necessary contingency plans to not find themselves on the wrong side. As we said, this is when things are likely to go awry.
So you see somebody like that standing up and trying to whip some sort of attention. I mean, how quick is it? And, you know, also referring to the Capitol Hill raid on January the 6th. I mean, what did we see there that teaches us about the human element, obviously the human element in mob mentality, but the way it works and how people get quickly aligned with the message?
Yeah. So there are a few important dynamics to mob mentality or mob psychology. And the first of that being the individuation. In other words, it's the loss or erosion and diffusion of the self, the individual self, into a larger others, which then allows for anonymity and emboldened action, disinhibition, and impulse dysregulation with a sense of you know, concomitant loss of culpability and accountability for their behavior. You know, people's identity fuses. They are easily roused in emotion. They, in effect, outsource their self and their sense of accountability and responsibility. And because everyone is doing it, it legitimizes and makes it acceptable. And with the anonymity of that, people are then, you know, more likely to be incited and incitable by whoever the leader. I mean, in this case, this guy is taking up that role in that space. Mm. He even is emboldened enough to go into a privately owned, you know, business, stand on top of the till and the packing area of that till, and make that announcement. Whether he has asked for permission to do so, you know, is questionable, but chances are it is unlikely. And therefore, because he feels it is a worthy cause, he has the right to mobilize, to do whatever means, to take whatever means available to him to say and do the kinds of things that he did.
Does this mob mentality make you feel untouchable?
Indeed. Indeed, that's that loss of the concomitant culpability that we feel as individual actors. If you engage in a particular behavior, you stick out as a person and therefore can be seen, can be identified, and can be held accountable for that. But when we act in a crowd, there is a sense of that diffusion of the self and therefore of the responsibility of the self to the larger crowd, and the sense that you know, there is impunity in that circumstance.
Now, mob mentality, as defined by the Merriam-Webster dictionary, is a large and disorderly crowd of people, especially one bent on riotous or destructive action. Yeah. Let's talk about crowds. Say you're watching a football match and you're in a crowd and you also get swept away. I mean, there's something about that people power, isn't it? You know, people stamping their feet, screaming and shouting. I mean, why is that so different? What's the similarities and the fact that often doesn't go wild and crazy?
Uh-huh. Yeah, there's a common goal in a soccer match, right? We are saying emotions are aroused by a common wish, and the common wish is to support, to galvanize, energize our players, you know, to win against an opponent. So we are acting together for a positive cause. And interestingly enough, the opposite is equally true. However, it is the means that differentiate. And you could see, even in a situation such as the one you've just cited, in a soccer match, right, there's a positive energy that exists in the stadium until some form of injustice is perceived to have happened, you know, against a team member, a player, and so on. That same energy, it can then be used, the same energy that was singing to cheer people on can be used to cheer people on in a destructive behavior to equalize, to get some form of justice for what has happened, you know, to equalize the playing field, as it were.
Mm. And I suppose in all of these instances, it's frightening how quickly it can turn.
Indeed, indeed. You know, as they say, it takes a matchstick to burn down a forest. And that's exactly what could happen. And this is where the role of the people that emerge as leaders becomes so important, and the power, the suggestibility or even gullibility of the crowd to incitement by that leader. And it doesn't help, of course, if we come back to the bigger stage, to the South African context, it doesn't help when there isn't another voice that mitigates that. It doesn't help when we have an emasculated president, when we have an unparented country where there is no other voice. The only voice that people are hearing is the voice of, you know, the EFF in this case, the inciting voices in this case, without any intervening variable. So there is a vacuum, and as you say, nature abhors a vacuum.
And people also like the strong man, don't they? I mean, they like somebody who stands up and says, this is what we're going to do. And as you say, there's a void when it comes to leadership. And you've got somebody here telling you, this is exactly what you do, and this is what you're going to do tomorrow, and this is what you should be thinking, and you're going to come with me.
And of course, what they also use is the in-group, out-group, the oppositional us versus them. If you are not with us, you are against us, and therefore we have every right to do this, that, and the other, to make sure that you don't get in the way of our rights, forgetting that in turn, they are getting in the rights of others to also do what they also feel is important to them. So it becomes a one-up on, and that's where things are likely to go awry when the possibility exists. And we've seen also in the media other videos that have circulated of people saying, we will not be intimidated. You are not God. You are not going to tell us. You know, you are just an ordinary citizenship. And it's an interesting voice that came that said, you know, Julius or even the EFF is a serious minority in this country. And they have a right, sure, to protest. However, they have to do so within the confines of the law. They can march. They can go to wherever, hand over a memorandum, and then go home. But of course, we know that unfortunately, one of the things that has happened in this country is that we are where we are, having shifted from an apartheid to a democratic dispensation, because people have had to take a stand against. And the question becomes, where is the line of a healthy, you know, stand and protest? And unfortunately, many things have happened, and people legitimize that by saying it's the only option they have. You know, and unfortunately, if we look at the history of the democratic South Africa, a whole lot of things that have happened, trains being burnt down and so on because the train was late. And there has been no voice that has authoritatively spoken, that has said, you know, put itself in that space as a voice of reason of sorts, as a voice of responsibility of sorts. And therefore, in the absence of that, it has inadvertently legitimized that people can do anything. And of course, we know that we see very little of people being held accountable for their actions. And therefore, it just becomes its own momentum, and it becomes, it takes on its own life.
But I mean, it just shows you the power of somebody with a voice, with leadership, who's charismatic. I mean, if you could put all that energy into a positive way of expressing, I mean, how powerful would that be? I think we lost you there for a moment. All right, let's bring in Nozibele from Enadale, who's got a comment on the individual interpretation of the process. Nozibele, good morning.
Morning, Jane. You know, my take on this clip of EFF is what it is, what they are saying, that people should stay at home. You know, that's what I interpreted. I don't see it as a negative, like inciting mob justice, whatever. I take it as it talks to an individual, whether you are in a business sector, or you are an employee, or you have to go about do your business. It talks to that person to say stay at home. Then the decision and interpretation is then up to you.
But don't you think the fact that, I mean, firstly, nobody has a right to tell you to stay at home. He's ordering you to stay at home. And the fact that he walks into a supermarket and he stands on a desk and he's shouting at people to do so. Surely the placards that are put up all over towns, surely that's enough?
I don't know how he presented the message, whether it's good or bad. But the message itself, for me, I interpret it as not a negative message, because it is not saying go out there and do this, that, and that. You know, it just says stay at home.
Okay.
You know? So that's how I. Sorry.
No, carry on.
So that is where I take the point from. It's not a negative. How he presented it, it could be a debated also, but the message itself is not saying people must go out and be and do whatever or and fight against law. It says stay at home.
Okay.
That's not a negative message to me.
Okay, Nozibele. Thank you very much for your call. I mean, Doctor, I mean, it just, you know, shows you how we all interpret things. I suppose, you know, the thing in South Africa is that we are becoming increasingly used to messages being shouted at people rather than, you know, the sort of more gentle approach, which I would advocate rather.
Yeah, and I guess the tone becomes that if you do the we shall overcome nice gentle tone, nobody pays attention to you. That it has taken riotous action, you know, for things to happen, for people to be listened to be heard, for their concerns to be validated and hopefully to be responded to appropriately. And here's the thing about these things is that, you know, we will never, even as we attempt to explain or create theories or concepts around which we seek to explain the behavior of people in crowds, is that there is no one size fits all. And it's all because of the subjectivity. I mean, I lost connection when she said, you know, to me. And that is the thing. And everybody has their to me, right? And of course, there are different messages, whereas that one may be, you know, perhaps rightfully or comparatively regarded as a gentle message. It's part of a bigger, you know, collective that has broadcasted other very insightful messages. And so it cannot necessarily be taken in isolation, because he wasn't just talking to the people that are in the shop. He was being recorded, and he knew that. And it's being broadcasted on the global platform, so to speak. And it is not an isolated voice that you could easily say, oh, no, it's a nice, it's a gentle. It belongs to a bigger collective and a collective of other messages, which then, you know, has a different tone and gravitas to that message and intent behind it.
Simon Lagrange has been in touch. Let's just listen to what he has to say.
Hi, I just wanted to ask a question. So in the Christian's Bible, the New Testament, Jesus is on the cross and one or two people go and stand there and go, hang him, crucify him, whatever. And everybody, even those who did not believe it, just joined in because they wanted to be seen as a part of, and nobody wants to be the odd one out. Why are we like that as human beings? It's a common thing. Everybody starts writing, one or two, 10 people start, and everybody loses control. Why are we sheep like this? Why can we not just walk away? Why are most of us built this way that we just want to, we'll just go with the flow, you know? Is there a reason?
That's an interesting question, because, of course, we don't read in that scenario what other people did, and we don't know whether the author just kind of took an aerial view without necessarily zoning in or zeroing in on the microdynamics of that situation. But I think the bigger question, or the answer to the bigger question here, is that we are social relational beings, a collective. As opposed to, you know, and that's what defines us as mammals instead of reptiles, which generally are more individual in their behavior. And so as mammalian creatures, the sense of belonging, the sense of being part of, is the essence of who we are and are wired to be as human beings. And therefore, you know, and of course, people then, within situations, people do a cost-benefit or risk-reward analysis that says, you know, what's going to happen if? And it's an interesting twist to a topic we discussed around bystander effect, you know, that says everybody kind of outsources the leadership to another. Let someone else do it, and then I can follow. There's that fear of sticking out, because the sense is then you risk vulnerability. And you may not perhaps have the following of the others that you would hope for to dissuade the particular action. And based on the numbers, you probably are likely to be outnumbered. And therefore, you know, there's a whole host of potential consequences that you may have to endure.
Dr. Kozi Gianni? Thank you for your time, as always.